Stock Group versus AM General, Mr. Dreher.
Good morning. I'm Mark Dreher. I represent the appellant Beanstalk Group, Inc. The issue on appeal this morning is whether the contract between the parties is to be interpreted and enforced according to the way it's actually written, or instead according to the way that the district judge rewrote it. The critical term in this contract was expressly defined.
This deal would give you, if it's construed the way you would like it to be construed, a pretty good percentage, 35-30% of this huge sale price. Why would anybody have intended that as the result here?
No, Your Honor, we're not suggesting that we would get 35% of the entire sale price. A portion of that sale price would be attributed to the sale of the mark. There were other properties and considerations in this single agreement. I think it would have been wiser if the parties had allocated a portion to the trademark. Evidently, they did not. We have never seen the actual agreement, but our understanding is that it is a lump sum sale of various property in exchange for various considerations. The trademark was part of that property. So we're not suggesting that we get 35% of all the millions that were involved. We're suggesting that we get 35% of what is reasonably attributed to the conveyance of the trademark.
What is that?
We don't know, Your Honor. There's been no discovery whatsoever in this case. We would have no way of knowing. But we would need to see the contract, and we would need to have some expert testimony.
You were supposed to get commissions for marketing, right? Marketing the trademark.
That's actually not so. We get commissions for any conveyance of the mark.
No, but the purpose of hiring you is for you to promote the trademark.
Yes, Your Honor, and we did that.
This isn't selling the trademark as part of this larger deal with GM. This joint venture is not a way of promoting the mark.
It's not
promotion.
Your Honor, what Beanstalk did for 2 years was to promote the mark and enhance the value of the mark. That mark,
yeah, and you were paid for your promotional efforts, but the sale of the mark is not a form of promotion.
Your Honor, respectfully, I don't agree with that. The sale of the mark is the culmination of the promotion. When Beanstalk invests 2 years to promote and enhance the mark, ultimately that mark has some value. Here, evidently, it had enough value that it was actually sold, not licensed. But a sale is simply a permanent license.
No, it's not. No, because are you familiar with the trademark doctrine of sales in gross?
Yes, Your Honor.
A trademark can't be sold apart from the business that manufactures the trademark product or service.
Yes, Your Honor, but in this case, the
party... So that means that a sale of a trademark is always a sale of something more.
However, Your Honor, in this case, the parties expressly defined what agreements would be compensated and what agreements would not. If there was no definition, then it would be appropriate to go to other laws, such as Judge Sharp did in this case, tax law, or to go to trademark law. Here, the parties expressly defined what agreements would be covered and what agreements would not be. And they said that any license agreement, they defined as a license agreement or any other agreement, which took the form of a license.
Well, it doesn't have to use the word license, but that doesn't mean that the sale of the underlying business is what is meant by a license agreement.
In this context, Your Honor, respectfully, I believe it does.
It doesn't make any sense, because you're not in the business of negotiating sales of businesses.
If a trademark is sold or licensed in connection with that business, why not, Your Honor? This could have easily been...
Because you're promoting. You're supposed to be... You're like an advertising agency. You're not a business broker. If a firm owning a trademark decides to get out of the business completely, why should you get a commission on that?
Because that's what the contract said, Your Honor. The contract said...
It's clear that it says that.
It says a license agreement...
It doesn't say that. It could be interpreted that way.
Your Honor, it says any agreement in which the property rights are transferred.
Were there any license agreements that existed before this contract was executed?
Prior to Beanstalk's involvement? Between AM and other parties not involving Beanstalk? I don't know, Your Honor. That's not part of the record.
Where in the record will we find an order staying discovery pending resolution of the motion to dismiss?
It occurred at a conference, Your Honor, in which we attended in South Bend. AM was located in South Bend. The court was in South Bend. We went there. We had a conference addressing a motion schedule, and Judge Sharp said that the discovery would be held in abeyance until the motion was concluded.
But if we look through...
There was no written order, Your Honor.
Okay.
That was addressed by Judge Sharp at a conference at which I attended. And he said, let's resolve the motion, then we'll turn to discovery. So, respectfully, I believe that if the court would look to the agreement itself, the court will find... These are sophisticated parties, Your Honor. This is not...
It doesn't make any sense. That's the problem.
Your Honor, I believe in the...
It's a windfall for you because you didn't have anything to do with this sale. You didn't even know about it.
But that's the whole point, Your Honor, that the agreement doesn't limit itself to negotiations in which Beanstalk is expressly involved, because we would always be disadvantaged if that was the case. Look at it, if you would, from the other perspective. If we invest 2 years in enhancing a product and promoting the product, and then they decide, okay, now we're going to get the benefit of the goodwill you've brought to our trademark, and we're going to take the final step ourselves. Assume for a moment it was a license instead of a sale. Would the opinion of the court be the same, that because we didn't participate in that ultimate license, even though we promoted the product for 2 years, that we're not entitled to the fee? The agreement expressly says that we are. The agreement says that we get compensated for any license, for any agreement, any license agreement as it's defined.
But you are the non-employee representative, aren't you?
I'm sorry?
Aren't you the non-employee exclusive representative?
Yes, Your Honor.
So doesn't that mean that somebody else would have rights to... sell that or license that trademark?
But that doesn't affect compensation, Your Honor. The compensation clause under paragraph 4A is very clear. It says that we get 35% of any agreement that is entered into during the term of the agreement, whether we participate or not. And that makes sense, because even though we're the non-employee representative, all that means is two things. We're not an employee, we're an independent contractor. And secondly, employees of AM would be free to get involved in the process for negotiating licenses if AM saw fit. We can't interfere with them using their own people. But that doesn't mean we don't get paid. It simply means that if they wish to have employees, as opposed to outside parties, independent contractors, also negotiate license agreements or participate, AM is free to do that. We're not going to tell them how to run their business, but we still get paid.
What is the reason that this is a valuable trademark? It's not anything you did, but it's promotion by AM General's employees.
Well, that would be facts that are not on the record, Your Honor, but the contract simply doesn't say that. I hate to belabor the point, but the contract says we get paid for any license agreement that's entered into, because implicit in this type of arrangement is that we are taking upon ourselves.
The question is the meaning of the term license agreement.
Well, it's defined, Your Honor. I don't think it's appropriate to go outside the agreement to figure out what a license agreement means. It's defined on the face of the agreement. Paragraph 1C says...
It makes no sense, because it's one thing for you to be engaged to promote a product. It's another thing for you to get a commission for what amounts to a business brokerage. And this business of apportioning the value of the sale between the trademark and the physical assets, how could that be done?
That shouldn't be our burden, Your Honor.
Who could do that? How would that separate the trademark from the product?
If people could avoid a fee simply by aggregating
what if Coca-Cola sold its business to General Foods? Would someone be able to value the trademark?
Actually, yes, Your Honor. We have an expert who's prepared to do that. But if Coca-Cola did so under this agreement, yes, it would be their burden to value the trademark. That's the agreement they chose to enter into. I submit in this case, Your Honor, they purposely did not allocate a value to the trademark because they did not want to attribute any portion of that to Beanstalk's fee. Bear in mind, please, Your Honor, that AM came to Beanstalk before entering into this agreement with GM and said, look, we want to renegotiate the meaning of license agreement to exclude what we're about to do. And Beanstalk said no, and then they went ahead and did it. I mean, certainly, we should have some opportunity to explore whether that really reflected the common understanding of the parties, that this type of transaction would be included under the contract. This case was dismissed on a motion to dismiss. Not only did the court deny our motion for summary judgment, but without any opportunity for discovery,
yes, but
through the case
act. Look, but you're riding two different horses, because on the one hand, you say the contract is unambiguous. On the other hand, you want to refer to extrinsic evidence. So which is it?
Your Honor, we didn't. In our motion for summary judgment, we said you don't need extrinsic evidence, but the court did. If the court on a motion to dismiss is going to look at extrinsic evidence, well, then it should at least look to what the parties said between themselves. The court didn't do that. The court tried to not only go outside the four corners of the agreement, but to construe these
basic things. It doesn't matter what the district court did. If this case is to be decided on the basis of the written contract alone, then our review is de novo.
Yes.
We don't have to look at extrinsic evidence, and I take it you don't want us to look at extrinsic evidence.
Well, they're two separate motions, Your Honor. In terms of the motion for summary judgment, I don't. But in terms of defending the motion to dismiss, I
don't know what you're talking about now.
On the motion
to dismiss. You want us to exercise plenary review and just look at the contract. You don't want us to look outside the contract.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So we can ignore all this extrinsic evidence.
I believe you can and should. All I'm saying is if the court were to look at extrinsic evidence, I believe the extrinsic evidence supports our point of view. We believe the contract on its face is unambiguous. The critical term is defined, and it's defined in a way to include the agreement that was entered into with GM. If AM thought that an exception should be made for this, it had the opportunity to carve that from the agreement. It didn't do so. And this is not a case where you're dealing with somebody at an economic or bargaining disadvantage. AM is a larger enterprise than Beanstalk. AM had counsel. AM understood what it was entering into and understood it so well that they came to us and said, we want to renegotiate to exclude this, and we said no. I submit, Your Honor, that on the face of the agreement, at least it's inappropriate to dismiss this by a motion to dismiss, because at worst, the term is ambiguous. I believe it's not ambiguous, and it supports our point of view. There were two elements, there were two claims, Your Honor. One was the AM General Agreement, which we said should be included as part of our compensation. The second breach of contract claim was for renewals of existing license agreements entered into before expiration of the agreement or even afterwards, which the contract said would be included in our compensation. The lower court found that that's correct, that the agreement expressly provided that during the, at least through December 2000, we would get credit for any license agreements entered into, and we would get credit for any renewals of existing license agreements after that.
So there's no license agreement that is not covered by the contract?
No existing license agreement? Well, now it's 2002, Your Honor. We don't know what happened after December 2000. Our argument would be that, yes, all the agreements are covered, even the ones that were entered into yesterday, because this agreement was never terminated. But I don't. That's not the focal point of our argument. At least for the agreements that existed as of December 2000, any of those agreements that were renewed, the contract expressly says we get credit for that. GM told us, we're not going to pay you for that. It was clear that that was an anticipatory repudiation. They said, we're not going to pay for anything after December 1999. They told us that they're not going to give us a commission for anything after that, even though the contract expressly says so. And here Judge Sharp agreed with us that the contract expressly said so. But we are not in a position, because we've taken no discovery, to be able to demonstrate how many of those agreements were renewed, how many were entered into that we're still entitled to a commission on, how the claim could be dismissed at the pleading stage, even though GM expressly said, we are not going to pay you what the contract says you're owed, because you can't demonstrate to us that we renewed any agreements without giving us the opportunity to take discovery.
I don't know why you call it anticipatory repudiation or anticipatory breach. And General Motors has made clear that it's terminated your representation of it. I mean, there's no. So you're suing for breach of contract. I don't know why the breach has occurred, hasn't it?
General Motors said that they're not going to pay us anything going forward. The agreement said that we're entitled to payment on commissions even after the contract is terminated. So whether they terminate it or not, what we're saying is that they've repudiated their obligation to pay us on renewals of existing contracts running into the future. Yes, they breached by renouncing the agreement, but what they breached is in anticipation of payments that will be owed in the future.
Did you plead damages in your anticipatory repudiation claim?
We don't know what the damages are, Your Honor.
Well, I agree you don't have to prove them, but did you plead them?
Yes, we asked for damages. We brought a claim for breach and breach of contract, two claims for breach of contract, and asked for damages in an undetermined amount. We would not be able to know what license agreements have been renewed without taking discovery. But here, it's beyond dispute that the agreement says that we're entitled to payment on those renewals, and that GM has said that they're not going to pay us on those renewals. And any renewals would only be within their knowledge, not with ours. We wouldn't be given notice of that. One would think at the very least now, we're entitled to pursue that claim, take discovery of what license agreements have been renewed, and make out a claim for damages as to our 35%. We've been denied even that opportunity. I see, Your Honor, that I've encroached on some of my rebuttal time. I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal, if I may.
Sure, that's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Bovieri.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. Judge Sharp made the right decision in April of 2001 when he dismissed the plaintiff's case in its entirety. His reasons were sound. I'm here to defend the reasons that he emphasized and also to speak to a couple of other reasons that also justify the dismissal decision. I think the best starting point is to recognize a couple of principles of Indiana law that govern contract interpretation, and by the way, the party's contract does specify that Indiana law shall govern. It is a legal question that is presented to you, one that the court below and this reviewing court, applying a de novo standard of review, may answer. The essential task here is to determine what the parties intended at the time they made their contract, and in doing so, it is the function of the court to consider all of the provisions of the contract and to harmonize all of those provisions so that no particular provision is rendered meaningless or superfluous. Now, against that backdrop, I'd like to address, subject to your questions, the counts in the complaint as they are alleged. It is the complaint and the representation agreement that is attached thereto that is open for consideration on the motion to dismiss. Count one, as your questions elucidated, essentially is a claim by Beanstalk for a part of a contract between AM General and General Motors that Beanstalk had nothing to do with. It's not a license agreement, it was the conveyance of a trademark.
Well, you never face head on the contention of your opponent that license agreement is a defined term, so we don't go on the common sense of what license means, but we just look at how it's defined in the contract.
Well, we do address it, but secondarily, Your Honor, let me first tell you how
it's his whole argument.
It is his whole argument, not ours.
So you can't just brush it under the table. You have to be forthright about it. So what's wrong with the argument?
There's such a distinction between a license and a sale that it does not make sense.
This is backing away. It doesn't matter what license means. Parties to a contract can define a term any way they want.
And in harmonizing all of the provisions of this agreement, it will be seen that even as defined, the party's intent was not to include sales. And I call the court's attention.
What was the purpose of the definition?
The definition was to include any type of agreement where rights to market or exploit the mark were negotiated by Beanstalk, irrespective of whether it was called a license or called something else. But in that scenario, Your Honor, the owner would still retain rights in the property. The sale of the mark to General Motors divested AM General of all of its rights in the property. So that is how we address the argument that is advanced, but the argument that we also put forward that Judge Sharp did not emphasize on that point is this. The representation agreement does not subject every license agreement to a commission and a fee earned by Beanstalk.
Well, I asked him about this non-employee-employee
yes, you did.
Thing. And he said that it's his interpretation that Beanstalk would be entitled to a commission even if it had nothing to do with a licensing agreement that was worked out solely between some third party and AM. Is that your understanding?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. There are many contract provisions that militate against that reading of the agreement. To do so first would render the words non-employee superfluous. They would have no meaning in this agreement. Now, in their briefs, in response to the argument that I just advanced, Beanstalk will say, no, non-employee meant nothing more than we wanted to be independent contractors. We didn't want to be treated or viewed as employees. If that's their argument, then the first sentence in paragraph 3 is superfluous, because paragraph 3 in its first sentence says, Beanstalk shall render all services hereunder as an independent contractor. There would be no reason to say that if the preceding paragraph, wherein the term non-employee was used, was intended to mean nothing more than Beanstalk was an independent contractor. It means that other employees...
Just so I understand this, then.
Yes.
They alleged that they went out, for instance, and went to Sega and said that Hummer is a great thing. You ought to make a video game with the Hummers.
Right.
And they signed an agreement, and they got compensated for that here.
Right.
Are you saying then that if Sega would have come directly to AM without any involvement, any services, anything rendered by Beanstalk, that Beanstalk would be owed nothing?
That is correct.
For that.
That's correct.
Contrary to what you're...
It is, Your Honor. And I think the real gist of that issue can be understood if we study paragraph 4 of the representation agreement, because that is the paragraph that speaks to Beanstalk's compensation. And it talks about Beanstalk's services hereunder being a reference to this agreement, and it also invokes the payment mechanism that the representation agreement contemplates for Beanstalk getting its money. And that mechanism, simply stated, involves Beanstalk collecting all of the license fee from the licensees with which it negotiated, and then turning over 65% to AM General and keeping 35%. There's no mechanism whatsoever mentioned in this representation agreement how, if Beanstalk's contortion of the compensation provision was correct, the monies that Beanstalk or that AM General collected on its own negotiated license agreements would be turned over to or accounted to Beanstalk. Judge Roedner, I think I spoke over a question you were about to ask.
Yeah, it seems to me the contract is very broad in terms of what constitutes a license agreement. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that the language is broad, and I think it was intended to protect against the assignment of rights to market the mark Hummer under an agreement other than something called a license agreement. But irrespective of how they define that term, they should only be entitled to receive payment for that which they negotiate. There are other provisions in this agreement that support that interpretation. For example, paragraphs 11 and 12 of the representation agreement. 11 essentially permits AM General the right to deal with the property, the trademark, in any manner that it sees fit, so long as it does not conflict with the terms of the representation agreement. And I submit to you that the only way that AM General could have dealt with the property in a manner that conflicted with the terms of the agreement would be to engage some other non-employee to do that which it told Beanstalk it could do under the representation agreement. I'd like to move briefly to the second count of the complaint, which, as Judge Posner noted, has been framed as if it's a claim for anticipatory repudiation. We've all used that term in our briefing because it foresees the possibility that Beanstalk will incur damages, but they haven't actually alleged that there is any existing license agreement on which they're not being paid, save the General Motors transaction, which they claim to be a license agreement. And the reason that Judge Sharp saw fit to dismiss count two, and the reason that we agree with him having done so, is because under the representation agreement, any proposed extension or modification or renewal of an existing agreement was subject to veto. And the veto right that was vested in AM General was absolute, and it was in their sole discretion. They could not be questioned on why they chose not to accept a tendered renewal or proposed modification. So if there is yet no right to compensation, there can be no claim that AM General has interfered with or projected an intent to deny compensation. And I think that's why, in the end, Judge Sharp said, even though you didn't plead it, and I'm injecting those words for him, if you have enough information or evidence to permit you under the guidelines of Rule 11 to plead that there is currently in place a renewal or an extension or a modification on which you are not being compensated, then go ahead and tell us about that in this cause in your complaint. But that they have not done. It is important to mention, I think it's been said ample times in the briefing, but not out loud here yet today, this is Beanstalk's standard form agreement. They are the drafter of this agreement, and under Indiana law, if there are ambiguities in this agreement that befuddle us because of the wording that was chosen, that works against the drafter, in this case, Beanstalk. And I call that to your attention in particular as it relates to this non-employee distinction. They advance an argument that it meant nothing more than independent contractor. We advance an argument that it means other employees can engage in the exploitation of the market. It's only the non-employee ability to do so that's been given to Beanstalk. If your consideration of those two arguments leaves you with the impression that the term non-employee is ambiguous as it is drafted in Beanstalk's standard form agreement, then the contract should be construed against Beanstalk because Beanstalk drafted. There really is one other count in the complaint that is actively pursued as against AM General, and that is count four of the complaint as it was submitted for unjust enrichment, which is really, under Indiana law, kind of a quasi-contractual remedy that would be pursued by a claimant if that claimant did not have a contract in place. Here there is a written contract that contains a merger clause stating that the party's entire understanding is subsumed in this representation agreement. The existence of that agreement and its ability to permit a court to compute what remedy, if any, would be due to Beanstalk if there was a breach means that the quasi-contractual theories that are advanced here, unjust enrichment, have no place in this case. Also, on the unjust enrichment theory that is advanced, one of the elements that must be alleged and sustained by the plaintiff is that they have somehow conferred a measurable benefit for which they've not been compensated. They have been compensated. I think that point was made here earlier during Mr. Dreyer's argument. They have been paid a 35% commission for everything they did. And we know that to be true because the agreement has a payment mechanism in it whereby every agreement they negotiate calls for the flow of money to come into Beanstalk, and Beanstalk then takes its fee, and it also gets reimbursed for certain expenses, and it doles the balance out. It's not as if AM General collected the money and then had a payment obligation. In conclusion, Your Honors, we believe that Judge Sharp correctly, soundly, and with ample explanation studied and assessed the four corners of this agreement, which was all he was obligated to do on a 12B6 motion. He was also entitled to study the contract attached to the complaint because it was attached. And on the basis of those documents alone, made the correct decision dismissing all of the counts of the complaint.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bovary.
Thank you.
Ms. Mills?
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. General Motors believes that the district court correctly dismissed all breach of contract claims against AM General. Should this court affirm the dismissal of those breach of contract claims, then this court should also affirm the dismissal of all claims against General Motors.
What are the claims against General Motors?
Count 4 is a claim against General Motors for unjust enrichment, and count 5 is a claim against General Motors for tortious interference.
Just those two.
Yes, sir. In addition, should this court, however, determine that Beanstalk has properly alleged a breach of contract claim against AM General, there exist independent reasons that allow this court to affirm the dismissal as to General Motors. And the law allows this court to affirm a successful motion to dismiss on any theory or basis found in the record. As to the unjust enrichment claim, Indiana law requires that a plaintiff allege or an express or an implied request. In this case, Beanstalk's complaint is void of any allegation that General Motors requested that Beanstalk confer any benefit. Because Beanstalk's complaint is absent some indication or allegation that General Motors requested anything from Beanstalk, Beanstalk is entitled to nothing under Indiana law. As Mr. Bovary drove home several times, the only reasonable inference that can be drawn from Beanstalk's allegation is that Beanstalk has been paid. They kept their 35% commission for any added value that they gave to the Hummer trademark. Beanstalk's tortious interference claim also fails for reasons stated by the district court as well as independent reasons. First, without a breach of contract, there is no tortious interference. Second, under Indiana law, a plaintiff must allege malice and a sole intent to injure. Once again, Beanstalk's complaint is void of any allegations that General Motors acted with malice or with the sole intent or exclusive purpose of injuring Beanstalk in the property transfer of the Hummer trademark.
Well, I'm puzzled by that. The usual tortious interference claim is simply that a third party for its private advantage induced someone to break a contract. It doesn't require anything more than greed. You make it sound as if GM has to have some hostile feelings toward Beanstalk.
You know, Your Honor, that's Indiana law, that the plaintiff alleged some sort of malevolence.
Are you saying that I may be way off the mark here, but are you saying that we should use Indiana pleading requirements in federal court? Is that what you're saying? In other words, don't the federal pleading rules apply here?
Yes, ma'am, the federal pleading rules apply, but under federal law, the plaintiff has to plead a sufficient complaint, and without pleading sole intent to injure or malice, they have failed to plead a claim under Indiana law.
Well, federal rules require notice pleading only. The claim for tortious interference here seems to meet the requirements for notice pleading. I had a little bit of a problem with your argument there.
Well, there's also a third reason why this court is allowed to affirm the dismissal, and that's because they failed to plead the element of absence of justification. In fact, they pled a legitimate business reason. Beanstalk's complaint alleges that AM General and General Motors entered into a $235 million multifaceted deal that included a property transfer, that included stock options. General Motors agreed to engineer, design, certify, and purchase Hummer vehicles. The only reasonable inference that can be drawn from that is that General Motors has a legitimate business reason. And when that legitimate business reason is pled, Beanstalk has pled themselves out of court because it simply negates one of the elements under Indiana law for pleading a tortious interference claim. They have to plead an absence of justification. They pled a legitimate business reason. They've pled themselves out of court. In the end, Beanstalk's complaint fails for what it alleges and for what it fails to allege. This court should properly affirm the dismissal of all claims against General Motors.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Mills. Mr. Dreher, how much time do you have?
Your Honor, counsel for AM tries to impress upon the court the point that Beanstalk was to be compensated only for the agreements that Beanstalk actually negotiated. That simply is not what the contract says. At the risk of belaboring the point, I think it's terribly important and indeed dispositive to refer to paragraph 4A, which says, as complete and total compensation for Beanstalk services hereunder, Beanstalk shall be entitled to receive 35% of the gross receipts or other compensation or the value of other consideration actually received on owner's behalf under any license agreement.
Received by Beanstalk. In other words, Beanstalk negotiates the agreement, and the payment for the license fee is paid to Beanstalk. Beanstalk keeps 35% and gives 65% to AM General. If Beanstalk doesn't negotiate the license agreement, Beanstalk doesn't get any receipts, and 4 is an operative.
That's not what the agreement says, Your Honor. It
sure
says,
is, and look at paragraph 5. Look what paragraph 5 says.
Paragraph 3, Your Honor. I'll look at paragraph 5.
Look at 5 first.
Okay. Talks about Beanstalk keeping accurate books and records.
Keep reading. 5 makes clear that Beanstalk is the recipient of the gross receipts.
Yes.
It must keep accurate records to make sure that it reimburses AM General at 65%. There's nothing in 4 or 5 which suggests any compensation for Beanstalk when someone else, namely an employee of AM General, has negotiated the license agreement. Because when an employee negotiates the license agreement, the payment, the license fee, goes directly to AM. It doesn't go through Beanstalk.
Your Honor, the agreement doesn't say that. I don't know.
Of course it says that. Look at 5. Look at the end of 5.
Paragraph 5 is directed towards Beanstalk receiving the money and Beanstalk accounting for the records. With the court's indulgence, if I can refer to paragraph 3.
Beanstalk shall furnish owner a full and accurate statement of all gross receipts actually received by Beanstalk under any license agreement. In other words, when Beanstalk negotiates an agreement and the fee is paid to Beanstalk, Beanstalk splits the money with AM General. But if Beanstalk has not negotiated the agreement, no money comes into Beanstalk.
Your Honor, respectfully, I don't think the agreement says the last sentence that Your Honor stated. If you look at paragraph 3, it says the opposite. Paragraph 3 says, on the top of page 3, it says, each license agreement shall provide for all payments thereunder to be made to Beanstalk on owner's behalf. Paragraph 3 says every license agreement.
Are you suggesting that when AM General made its joint venture agreement with General Motors, General Motors was required to make the payment to Beanstalk?
For the trademark, yes, Your Honor. That's what the agreement says, Your Honor. If they want to say something...
But that's crazy. That's completely crazy, because then any customer of Beanstalk, whenever it sells its... Even if it sells its entire business, which means the trademarks have to go with them, it has to... Part of the sale price has to be deposited with Beanstalk?
For the trademark, Your Honor. That's what the agreement says. It says...
No, it can't mean that because, look, if the parties meant the agreement to cover a sale of the entire business of the purchaser of Beanstalk services, they would have had provisions in there about allocating the purchase price between the trademark and the physical assets.
Respectfully, Your Honor, if they intended a sale to be excluded, the agreement would have said that. The agreement defines agreement.
But you can see, can't you, that if the agreement embraces the sale of the entire business, it creates complexities, ramifications, and so on that rational parties would have addressed in the agreement. They wouldn't have pretended that it was just another license agreement.
No, Your Honor, I think all that can be inferred from this is that at the outset they didn't contemplate those complexities
a sale of the business.
Your Honor, I believe they did because AM approached Beanstalk and asked Beanstalk to exclude
it. Now you're going outside the contract, which you said we didn't have to do.
Your Honor, if the contract is deemed, I mean, all the questions here, I think, suggest that this contract's ambiguous. I don't think it is. But the questions and answers from counsel suggest that it's ambiguous. If the conclusion is that you're going to depart from what it says on its face and say, look, it just doesn't make sense, at worst, that means it's ambiguous.
Well, then ambiguities are resolved against you as the draft, Your Honor.
Not without looking at extrinsic evidence, Your Honor. Respectfully, that's what you need to do. If you're going to say it's confusing, it's ambiguous, it's not clear, we're going to depart from what it expressly says on its face, then respectfully, the court is looking at extrinsic evidence. The most important extrinsic evidence is that AM itself construed this sale to come under the terms of the agreement. But the rule of contra preferentum does not say that any time there's an ambiguity, you construe it against the draftsperson. The rule says that if all other efforts at contract construction fail, in some circumstances you construe it against the draftsperson, and not in a case like this, where it's a negotiated agreement between two sophisticated parties. That's what the Dawn Engineering case of this, Dawn Equipment case of this court said. And the case that's cited under Indiana law here doesn't say differently. What it says is that case specifically said an indemnification agreement is to be strictly construed, and in a landlord-tenant relationship where there's not equal bargaining power, you would construe it against the landlord as the drafting party. That doesn't have any applicability here. Beanstalk, in fact, is a lesser enterprise than AM. Both sides are represented by counsel. AM had every opportunity to say something different if it wanted to say something different here. It didn't do that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you to both parties, all three parties. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess. We'll take a brief recess.